I think it's important to remember, even before this happened, that there were 2.2 million people who were already displaced in South Sudan, and 330,000 of those were refugees. But what we've seen since April 15th, when the conflict started in Sudan, is that close to 70,000 people have crossed over the border. We see people not only crossing over into South Sudan, but we see people crossing into Chad, to Egypt, Chad. This is a regional issue that's happening. We've seen lots of people crossing at the borders. Mm-hmm. And recently, last week, I was in Rank. I went to Jorda at the border. And we've seen that the people who are now crossing are very vulnerable. These are people who have exhausted all their resources just to get across the border. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing a very vulnerable state of affairs.
Right. And speaking about vulnerability and how they've exhausted all their resources, how would you describe the situation at the borders?
At the border, I have to say, it was the first time in a few years that the situation actually broke my heart to see how people were staying. So when people crossed the border, they were already exasperated. They had already gone through horrific events just trying to get out of Khartoum. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they got to the border, like I said, they exhausted all their financial resources. Many people had borrowed from friends and family just to get across. People were crossing in full private vehicles, in vans, and even on donkey carts, and lots with little children on them. And so what I saw there is when they got to the border site, they were just there with their luggage, and they would use scarves or poles to make a temporary shelter to just shield them from the hot sun. Many of those people were moved to transit center, and the transit center itself was quite congested with lots of people who were looking for a new place to go, but didn't necessarily know or how they were going to get there because they didn't have the resources.
Right. And just to paint us a picture, because you were there, you saw what happened there. I mean, you're speaking about makeshift shelters. And what, of course, clicks our minds is, are there toilets? How is the sanitation there?
Mm-hmm. So there is at the transit site swift movement by agencies trying to provide some of these necessary things just to make sure that people are there living in some sort of dignity. Mm-hmm. So there were some toilets when I was there. Unfortunately, by the time I was arrived, they were actually full. And so this was a problem. There was some open defecation and bad practices like that. Thankfully, IOM and other agencies were starting to put in additional toilets. But there was water trucking by some agencies and provision of health services. But the numbers of people at the transit system, it just exceeded what people expected. You know, in the first few days, there were 100 people, then 1,000 people, and then it was like 1,000 people were arriving every day. Mm-hmm. So it was just, the people were coming faster than the services could be provided. Right. But I'm happy to say now, the humanitarian community is rallying. We're getting coordinated, and we're able to provide some of those resources. Hmm. People are starting to move out of the transit center. People are being moved to different places like Malakal, Polosh, and even the RRC is moving people, which is really good. Mm-hmm. But still, more people are coming every day.
Right, and there's no way to stop them, of course, because they're looking for, better security. But which nationalities are dominant in these groups that are fleeing into South Sudan?
I would say the vast majority are South Sudanese returnees. These are people who are coming back home, in a sense, because many people who made new homes in Khartoum and have been there for years. Right. Or some, you know, I was speaking to a gentleman who was there. He was from Turele, and he said, okay, he's going to try to make his way back home. And I asked him about his family, and he had six children. Those six children had never stepped foot into South Sudan.
Wow.
So it's a really challenging and complex situation because a lot of people are tied to Khartoum, but they're also tied to South Sudan. There's talks about moving people back to their places of origin, but some people left their place of origin with a good reason. Mm. And so it's trying to help people to land in a good spot and help them to rebuild and become more resilient. And but that's going to be a tough task ahead of us.
Right, right. We painted a picture of hope because you said that international communities and the NGOs are rallying in to come and help save the situation, but you also hinted that there are more people than the services that are required there. Now, with both returnees and refugees coming in, what challenges are you facing given the complexity of the situation?
I think one of the most complex things is really helping people to move. We want to make sure that we're helping people to go to where they want to go. Mm. We're not forcing people to go to places where they have no intention of being or where they might be unsafe. When people try to move of their own means, it could be upwards to $50,000 SSP
right.
to get movement for one person to go even to Malakal. And those are very high prices,
yes.
especially in this economy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's we have to help people to move, but we want to move them safely into where they want to go. And
right.
then once they arrive there, we need to make sure that they're providing them with services. So DRC, like many other agencies, we work in Malakal, and our team in Malakal is actually receiving people and helping to provide them with services and help them to know where they can get, especially vulnerable people, to know where they can get additional services. The other thing that we're trying to do, because it's so complex, is we're working together. So the Danish Refugee Council, along with the Norwegian Refugee Council and mm-hmm. MEDER, we work together in a consortium. We know we can do so much more together than if we work as separate agencies. So we have this emergency rapid response mechanism, which is allowing us to respond not only in places like Rank and in Malakal, but also in Awil, in you know, our teams in Bentiu responding, our teams in Morang are responding, and that's because we're doing it in partnership.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Elana, thank you so much for making our time to come and speak to us today. So any projections and foresights on either worsening or improvement possibilities of the situation?
It's hard to predict things, but it seems like every day more and more people are coming. Like I said, I want to be hopeful because we're seeing as humanitarian community, we are being able to rally some resources. Of course, we would always like to have more resources to help more people. I think we need to help people where they're going to be landing. And that even includes Juba because we know a lot of people intend to come here. We need to look at the immediate needs that people have, whether it's for having access to water, protection for children, but also slightly longer term.
Right.
I just heard you talking about the increasing prices of things in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help people be more resilient? And the households who are absorbing people, how do we help them to cope? So there's some immediate needs that we have to look at and also some slightly longer term needs.
All right, Elana, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.